You Do in Podcasts, the interview podcast where I talk to cool people about the amazing stuff they're working on. My name is Matt, and this week I have an incredible guest. This week I am so excited to sit down with the one and only Dylan Apelian. You might know Dylan from any number of a dozen different things. Either their work on TTRPGs, their actual play appearances, or as the host of the incredible One Shot podcast. Dylan is constantly working on something exciting. I'm so glad I got the chance to sit down and talk to him about TTRPGs, being on a podcast, BioWare games, and a whole lot more. So without any further ado, Dylan, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Yeah, excited to be here.
I was telling Dylan how excited I was to have them on the show because, you really know you've made it as a podcast when Dylan is on your show.
Oh, that's stop like the official it. Stamp. Oh, my God. Oh, wow. Well, that is very kind and sweet.
The worst thing about me is I will never miss an opportunity to compliment someone that I feel is incredible and deserves it. So
that's very nice.
Watch for that.
Okay. All right. I'm on alert.
But for people who somehow might not know who you are, Dylan, why don't you go ahead, introduce yourself, who you are, what you do, what we're here to talk about.
Amazing. Yeah. My name is Dylan Apelian. My pronouns are, I use mirror pronouns. So my pronouns are your pronouns. Use them for me. I am a tabletop game designer, an actual play performer / creator, podcaster, and I am host of the One Shot podcast, co-author of the upcoming Ultimate RPG Villain Backstory Guide coming out on March, and author of a new game coming and launching on BackerKit for Zentopia called All's Fair, and a handful of other things.
Do you ever feel like you're doing too many things?
Wow. Hey, I thought this was going to be super casual. And
no, we're getting right into it. That was a lie. We're getting right.
Yeah, I do. But I mean, most of the stuff that I just listed off is... I'm doing it because I can't help it. So whether or not that it's too much or not, it is just sort of a deep burning need to make and play games. But yeah, when you toss in my day job on top of that, then it does often feel like I'm doing too much. and arguably that's true.
Well, and a lot of it has to be, the creative process is such, a lot of it has to be a lot of stuff just coming due at once. Just, oh, all of these, I'm sure Ultimate Villain Backstory was however many months when it was done.
Right. We wrote it last year. Yeah. Yeah. That one, thankfully, really right now, the big excitement with that is that come March time, we get to do promotion and stuff for that, which will be a different kind of busy versus the kind of busy that came with actually writing the thing, which was intense and fun, but definitely a lot. And so now, we're going to get into the part where we get to talk about it and show it to people and like hopefully go to cons and show it to people there. So that's going to be a fun thing, too.
I was just talking about this with my partner. So it seems a prescient question. Do you feel bored talking about the things that you do insofar as like, would you rather be doing more things than promoting the things you've already done?
No, no. And I have a big bee in my bonnet about this. This is something especially, I don't know that I would say this is a huge problem in tabletop RPGs as much. I think in the indie scene it can be because there is just a sense that people are just making things so constantly and the movement of it all is so fast. But I especially sense this in actual play, and I've definitely been a part of this in, especially when I was like starting out in actual play, is that so much gets made and immediately moved on from and forgotten even by the people who've made it. And I've done this. I've been on so many shows that have done this. So I really, really place a lot of value in and insist that when you've made something that you care about, which is the stuff you should be making. You should be making the stuff you care about, and then you should be spending your time and energy and efforts championing those things.
Oh yeah, I totally get that. It's a thing I've noticed in just I wonder how much of it is life, you know, but you know, factors like social media and just the ever crushing, you know, death of capitalism is people are always pushing for that new thing. They're always talking about the new thing, the thing that's upcoming, the thing that is just about to happen. And then, you know, I see this primarily in video games, as that's kind of my like my main focus and what I keep track of things. It feels like the second a video game comes out, people stop talking about it. It's like, oh, I can't wait for this game that's coming out next week. I'm so excited. Oh, here it comes. And it may as well.
And then it's in the rear view and it's gone.
Right.
Yeah. But meanwhile, like, you know, if you care about this thing that you made, which you hopefully do, like, part of loving it is then spending that time with it, going back to it and helping it continue to find people. Because the thing is, like, you know, I would think that I yell about things that I do so incessantly all the time, but I still encounter people who follow me, who know my work and stuff like that, who don't know about certain things that I've made, you know, at even years later, maybe months later. So there's no such thing as, you know, too much. Mm-hmm. You know, you should be proud of these things and you should want to continue to help them find the people that will enjoy them.
I love that. And you know, I think it speaks to the little joke I made at the front where it's just like you do so much. I think part of that is, you know, you said your effort to continually refresh interest in what you've done, you know, mm-hmm. I think it's in your Instagram bio. You have like you played such and such in Unprepared Casters. And it's like, how long ago was that? You know, is that air
three
quotes
three and a half years ago or something?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's not recent or relevant. I'm doing air quotes for the listener. Mm. But it's like you said, it's a thing that you care about. It's a thing that's important. It's a thing that you want to have a conversation about.
It's something I'm so proud of. That's why it's there. It's something that I'm so deeply proud of. Yeah.
My partner and I listened to, I was going to say the time you were on Unprepared Casters, but I think it's been multiple times. And we had
now it has, but that was the first time is that one. Which one did you listen to?
I can't remember now. It's been, I'm gonna have to look.
Off the rails. Was there a train involved?
There was not a train.
Oh, were we little creatures? Did I have a little bitty voice?
Yes.
Okay. That was the Wander Home season that we did.
It was the Wander Home season now that you
say
it.
And back again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of those tricky times where I got my partner to listen to an action play thing. I was like, listen, I'm like, they're all little creatures. It's going to be really cute. Everyone is great. You're going to have a great time.
And it was a great time.
It was a great time. Unprepared Casters, just a little side shout out. Everybody at Unprepared Casters is great.
Oh, my God. Honestly, my loves. I have... There are just a couple of times, you know, in my time making any kind of art where you meet a random creative or group of them and you just slot in together perfectly and you just feel like, oh, my God, I found a new second home. And that Unprepared Casters became that very fast for me.
I love that. And it's interesting to like looking at your body of work, which I want the listener at home to know in my notes. I take notes before the interview, you know, thoughts and things I want to talk about or themes or whatever.
Lovely. Yeah.
I wrote down horny as a brand.
Yeah.
And so do you feel like there is, I feel like I'm just getting right to the therapy questions and this.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I hit you really hard at the front and then we're just
no,
we're just
please
staying on
keep
it.
Going. Yeah.
Do you feel like there is a correlation with the way that you approach your game design being very focused on emotional, physical, conjugal connection, and your experience, for lack of a better word, as a creator working with so many different creatives, fitting into so many places, taking on so many projects?
Totally. Well, I mean, when I first started to design games, a lot of the things that I were making were about these, like, kind of mundane human interactions, like just parts of like the normal human experience. You know, I gamified Spin the Bottle was an early one that I had made when I was just tooling around with game design. And that one was such a thing because I think that, you know, examining these kind of mundane human interactions, these things that are sort of taken for granted, like, you know, being in high school or college and playing Spin the Bottle or whatever, as like just sort of a thing that doesn't get investigated. But really, when you really pick it apart, it is a emotional hell to be in a situation where you're playing Spin the Bottle, because everybody has sat down, already knows who they want to kiss, and can't let anyone know that that's what they really are doing this for. So there's actually like a sub game happening within this game of Spin the Bottle where you are just employing this nerve-wracking, anxious social subterfuge to try and get away with kissing the person you wanted to kiss the entire time. And so moments like that where I spend a lot of time thinking about the kind of like the magic underneath these mundane little experiences that we have when we interact with each other as people, and turning those moments into things in games is then something that I think I take when I work with other people, and when I get to be creative with other people, to see how magical it is to share something like that, to be sharing your ideas freely, and then to hit that synergistic moment where something that you say makes someone else think of something that's important to them, or triggers a memory of theirs, or brings up a big emotion, and then you get to explore that together. Like, I live for that. I love that. And so working with other people is the best part of all of it. That's why I love to do this specifically, because it does so often involve other people and collaborating and being emotionally honest with each other, you know, in a way that I think a lot of performance work doesn't always allow. But when you're improvising and you're bringing yourself to your characters and things like that happens all the time. And it's magical.
I'm always aghast sometimes at the wonderful answers that I get for my silly little questions.
It was a good question. It was a great question.
I'm just like, damn, I got my silly little show and people out here spinning gold. I love it. I want to start talking about like your design background. Like,
sure.
What got you designing RPGs in the first place?
Oh, a very, very random. I mean, I was this years ago. I always liked games. I didn't have a wealth of experience with things in the indie sphere. I basically knew a couple of the big players. I knew D&D. I knew World of Darkness, which was my first role playing game, you know, when I was a teenager. So I was familiar with that, new Pathfinder, Starfinder, like those kinds of bigger things. I had a vague awareness of other games, but I was really not immersed in it. And so game design was not really on my radar for a while. In fact, like when I started to make actual play, when I started to make, you know, content regarding games, like you could have called me a D&D influencer. And I do spit to invoke that, but it was kind of true. And then what really happened is that in this meeting people, is the key here, because I'm meeting people and meeting so many people. Eventually, I started to meet other game designers, meet people who are doing these things, and learning that they were just sort of making things because they wanted to, and making games because they felt like it would be a good idea, whatever was in their head. And like, it sounds simple because it is simple, but I didn't realize it could be that simple, that you could have a thought, have an idea, and then make it. And so I made a few silly one page type of things, you know, not too serious, not, you know, not really knowing what I was doing, but I had a lot of fun doing it. And the more that I tried that, the more people I met and the more games I got to try. And it really wasn't very long before I fell in love, and I was incredibly just sucked into the world. And now I can't even imagine life without these games.
It's funny, like, the amount of time that I have spent online in various forums talking to people about indie games and talking to people about the indie TTRPG space or indie video game space in the same sort of fashion, just how easy it is to be excited about things that aren't the five big things that people are excited about. The yeah. moment you start to put your toe in the water, like the once yeah. you finally like get over that first step and get mm-hmm. immersed and see what is out there, just the wealth and just breadth of stuff that is out there. It's ridiculous.
It's wild. I have a show where I play a new indie RPG every few weeks. I've been hosting it for 2 years. I have not scratched the surface. I have not even like remotely made a dent in my own personal two playlist. You know, like I play so many games and I still haven't cracked, you know, into it far enough. There's just so much to do and so much to see and so much to play.
That's that gives us a good segue to talking about podcasts. I don't want to talk about One Shot first, though. I want to talk about Dorkspawn because I love Dragon Age.
Yeah.
And I love that you love Dragon Age. I love how much you love Dragon Age.
It's a lot.
I think I feel like I'm a big BioWare fan. I feel like Dragon Age sickos are like the...
Oh yeah,
we're the real fans. Okay.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I love Mass Effect. That's great. If you played Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age 2, like in that time, you were about it. You were a real fan.
Oh yeah, the dedication goes crazy, and the fanfic, the art, the theorizing. I was big on Tumblr under a different username years ago.
And for the show notes, what was that username?
It's a gone one. It got deleted. So it's no longer there. But it's really funny that you say that. What time did we get on this call? 7:30. At 7:25, I was playing Dragon Age. So it just just so. and that's true.
Just so everybody knows what it's about.
Yeah.
For people who might not know, if you know, somehow you're not familiar, Dorkspawn is Dillian. Hi, that's a new character. That's a character name for you. I'm gonna leave that in. That's a character name for your next actual play.
You know, autocorrect likes to Dillian me for people. So I get Dillian a lot in text messages.
It doesn't know what to do after that I. I can get that.
Not.
Where it's like, wait a minute, there should be another letter.
Something here. Yeah.
Dorkspawn is Dylan's podcast, ostensibly about Dragon Age, but now also moving into Mass Effect, which is exciting. I do love Mass Effect. I will say I am the Mass Effect 1 defender. That is my role in the
pantheon. Oh, no, I really liked 1. Because this was... So Dorkspawn is a... like, we call it a video game book club podcast. What me and my co-host, who's my best friend, do is we're sharing these sort of choice-heavy video games with each other. We're each playing them, and then we're kind of recapping, discussing them in bits. I showed them Dragon Age for the first time. They showed me Mass Effect for the first time. And I wasn't sure if I was going to like Mass Effect. It's been, you know, I was such a Dragon Age person and I never played it, even though obviously I knew it was on my radar. But I wound up loving it. I wound up thinking it was absolutely great. It was pretty terrific. And I think about those characters still all the time. And so we have played both of those series in full. And now we are playing Fallout New Vegas, which I've also never played.
That's a good one.
That is, it's a good one. This one's interesting because we've never done a open world game, obviously, before. So it's a little bit different. There's not like clearly defined chapters, but I'm still having a fun time with it. It's a fun game and there's a lot of weirdness to it, which I really appreciate. So I'm getting a lot of meat out of that.
Is there any interest in going back to older BioWare titles like KOTOR or Jade Empire?
It's so funny you say that. That is the next game on our list is Knights of the Old Republic. We are going to be doing that. Yep. And that is back in my court because I have played that one and my co-host Robin has not. So it's going to be fun.
I just imagine a big spreadsheet of games that is just like add a game and then you're just like,
Yep, there is. We were looking at it this morning. Yes, there's a huge spreadsheet.
Coordination's important.
Yeah.
Can I drop my favorite Mass Effect factoid on you? You might know it, but it is my favorite. Jack was originally designed to be, I guess, at that time, bisexual, but probably overall pansexual. Except for the very explicit Fox News controversy.
Yeah.
The images from history that will be burned into my memory is Jeff Keighley on Fox News talking about the air quotes again, hardcore alien pornography in Mass Effect 1.
Hilarious.
You know?
Oh,
you can't shake that. You can't shake that.
No. And I believe a similar thing happened in Dragon Age as well, with Origins, because I believe it was Morrigan that was supposed to be romanceable to both genders and then got switched at the last minute or something. But yeah, vile. Vile and disappointing.
We played Dragon Age Origins on my stream very recently, and I got the worst romance sort of subplot. Like, we very intentionally went through and I was like, what's like the weirdest stuff we can do in Dragon Age? What's the stuff you would never see on a normal playthrough? So we got the option where you save Loghain, which was already hard enough, and then you have Loghain and Morrigan get together before the final battle to save to create the safe baby. And that's maybe the most awkward cutscene I've ever seen in a video game.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one that has big payoff in Inquisition, I think.
It's great. I'm excited. Payoff. I'm excited to follow through with that storyline. But I was like, I don't know. I hate all of this that's happening from a story perspective.
Yeah. I think worst romance route you can go in Origins is to save Loghain as a character that's romancing Alistair. Because he will leave your ass. He will leave your ass so fast.
Have you? I mean, as a Dragon Age fan, I have to imagine you've done those playthroughs where you've set out at the start. You're like, here's what's going to happen. Here's every story beat planned out.
I actually don't like doing that. I like to make a character and feel really in character, and like. Think about the game as it's going from that character's perspective. That's my ideal way to play a video game like that. So that's what I do even after all these playthroughs.
You're like, well, I mean, I guess I'm romancing Zevran again. That's just how my character feels. It's wild how that keeps happening, but
crazy.
Let's talk about One Shot Podcast. Because I think that's probably where a lot of people will be familiar with you. I'm just gonna take a stab at it probably.
I hope
actually,
so.
Or what do you think your most known for? What do you think your most famous thing is?
Yeah, now I do think it is One Shot. I think for a good long while it would have been the Atomless or maybe Unprepared Casters, but I do think now it has fully shifted into One Shot being that thing. Yeah.
I can't believe it's been 2 years already.
Almost. In just like what? 2 weeks? Yeah.
What is time?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. It keeps moving.
It's one of those bad questions again. Stop doing these. Again, for people who might not be familiar, One Shot Podcast is an actual play podcast. It was originally hosted by James D'Amato, where they play a new indie TTRPG. Air quotes every episode. Sometimes there's two-parters. Dylan took over hosting duties about 2 years ago. I don't want to say what was the hardest thing about taking over One Shot, because I think that's, you know, hard enough as it is. What was kind of your mindset going into a hosting role that was already so well established? And
yeah,
mm-hmm. You know, for like when I, even still to an extent, when I think One Shot, I think about James.
Of course. And many do. And many do. And they should, because I mean, you know, I've been there for 2 years. James hosted the show for 10 years. Like, obviously, that should be the association for sure. You know, I wish fewer people emailed me that? Yeah. But I am.
Oh, gross. Don't do that. Boo. If you hear this, boo. Boo you.
But no, I mean, that is very fair. I think that the hardest thing was it took me a while to feel comfortable. Totally comfortable making it mine. Like, there was a while where I felt like I was just sort of like trying to slip in unnoticed, as though I had taken James's face and like had
James doesn't know I'm uploading this podcast.
Right. Like, there, you know, there was a time in the beginning where I was still figuring out, like, okay, how do I make this mine? And also, how do I get myself to feel comfortable doing that and comfortable, you know, making decisions about it and stuff like that, and really getting it out there. So that was a little bit tough. Obviously, it's tough when, you know, a show's been on for that long and the host changes. You know, there are always going to be people that don't like the change, and that, you know, like, that is, I think, normal. But it's still tough because you're hoping that, you know, you will win over everyone. But that's impossible to do. So, so really learning to be okay with some people not liking the change, and then shifting that to be like, well, okay, who isn't here already that will like this and will like the change, and trying to find those people. And so there's that. And that has been a fun challenge, but a fun one.
Have you had any big goals or designs when that makes it sound evil? When you took over, that you were, you know, did you say, you know, I want to, you know, feature more journaling games. I want to feature more small press games. Did you have any sort of big ideas in mind?
Well, One Shot has already been doing an amazing job since long before I got there of showcasing like smaller games, small print games, and truly indie stuff. So carrying that on was easy. I think my big goal was to really be intentional about who I was picking to play what games. So like, what I wanted to do was to showcase the games with the best possible performers and be really, really intentional and mindful about that. One of my favorites early on was our Bloodbeam Badlands game that we did, which was Bloodbeam Badlands is a game by Vidya Valetti, who is one of the best game designers in the world. And it's about vampires in an apocalypse where the sun never sets. It's
That's going to make weird. That hard.
Yeah, it's weird. It's truly strange. It's so unique for a vampire game. It's unlike any other vampire game out there. And so my goal was, okay, I'm going to bring on my favorite Vampire the Masquerade actual play performers and have them play this because they're, people know them as playing vampire characters. They are so good at playing vampire characters. But now I want to twist this and like give them something new to chew on, something a little strange that they're not going to get out of Vampire the Masquerade. And also really have people who get and love and are passionate about vampires to play and showcase this game by Viditya. And so we got Laura Tutu, award-winning Vampire the Masquerade performer, as well as Josephine McAdam, very well-known LA by Night performer. And they killed it. It was awesome. It was perfect. It did exactly what I wanted it to do. And so that was kind of an early example. Very recently, we just played a game called Last Train to Bremen, which is a game using Liar's Dice. Brilliant game. Perfect game, actually. About a band that made a deal with the devil for their success as they are running away while he is coming to collect. We played that game. I played that game with a group of people who make improvised musical actual play called RPG Major. So we did a whole ass musical about this band. And so taking Last Train to Bremen, this game that is about a band, and actually being able to have music be a part of it in a real in-character way was the best possible way to showcase that game. It was so much fun, and it was exactly what I wanted to do. And then, you know, I have things like, okay, if I'm going to play micro RPGs, I want to have designers who make micro RPGs come on and play. If I play a world building game, let's get people from a popular world building podcast to come on and play that with me. Like, you know, making sure that these things match, that the people who are playing the games match the game well, that we're playing, that they have a vested interest in it. We played a game that was a tragic game, and I was like, all right, who do I know who makes people cry all the time on, you know, in these actual plays? We're gonna hunt them down. Those are gonna be the people who are gonna come and do this with me. So that has been my big goal, and I think that by and large, I feel like I've done a pretty good job of that so far, and that's going to continue to be my ethos for the show.
I thought you were going to say, I've done a good job and I'm going to continue to do so.
Yeah.
Which, I'm here for. I would respect the confidence. Like, I crushed it. I'm going to continue to crush it.
And I will continue to crush it.
If I can look out. What is the process for picking a game for one shot look like, roughly?
So there's two things that happen. Either I know about a game. I mean, I have a list about a mile long of games that, you know, I would one day like to have on the show and just haven't gotten to yet or whatever, or haven't figured out the right cast or what have you. So there's that. So either it's a game that I love and that I just really want to play and want to feature, or it's by a game designer that I love and want to give a boost to, or things like that. And then we also have the opportunity for people to sponsor episodes. So, game companies can and do occasionally come to us and sponsor an episode, in which case I will still do the same thing. I'll still look for the people who are going to be the best for it. And in that case, you know, if they're sponsoring it, I will try to make sure that it is something that is going to, like, you know, be beneficial to them. It's going to like showcase something that they want to showcase. It's going to be in time for their next crowdfund or release or whatever, you know.
Do you ever put a game aside where you're like, this would be a great thing to have on the show, but I, you know, just kept, and then, you know, you're sort of chipping away at that cast list until it finally pops? Do you ever feel a pressure to get games, like we talked about at the beginning, Do you ever feel a pressure to get games when they're new or hot? Like, do you feel like that's part of your goal when making the one shot, like as the show component of
that's
it?
That's not a primary goal for me. That is something that when I try to do that, it's because I'm trying to be helpful, really. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a helpful thing to do for, especially for games that are crowdfunding or like that have just released by someone who's in, you know, small print. Like, I think having something come out, you know, while it's still fresh is helpful to people. So that is like one reason why I might do that or I might focus on that. But I have played games that have been out for years. And it's just because I love them and I think that they're great and I just want to show them. I've even played games that aren't out yet and don't plan to be for a long time.
Listeners, we're playing this game. You can't. So
yeah,
too bad.
You can't. Or like, you know, one of the earlier games I played was Dawn the RPG and there was a quick start out, but the full game just came out. And that was like, I think the first or second game that I played on the show 2 years ago. The full game just came out like this month. Bloodbeam Badlands also was a quick start when we played it on the show. I mean, the quick start's still there. It's available. But the full game is coming out next year, I think. Or later this year, I should say. We're in 2026 now. Yeah.
We did it.
We made it.
I asked that question specifically. I've had discussions with people about what is... In big general ideas, what is the role of people who make actual plays, who make reviews, who make, you know, that sort mm-hmm. of referral style content of saying, look at this thing, isn't this thing cool? Mm-hmm. Kind of what is their role and responsibility in the ecosystem of, you know, creation? Again, these are big words. These are not the right words. You know, kind of what is...
Yeah, it makes sense.
I think it's exciting, me personally. I think it's exciting to do, you know, to focus on things that are new, that are like you said exactly, like stuff that's coming to Crowdfunder, stuff that's a little smaller to help get eyes on it. And then I'm always curious about the responsibility of, thinking about like board games or video games in the same sense, like, should you only talk about things that are available? Should you only talk about things that people could go and buy in the store? If you talk about, you know, if you review a game, you know, if you review a board game that's out of print, or if you review a video game that nobody can buy except for $200 on eBay, like, how does that fit into the ecosystem of discussion? And how does that work in the TTRPG space?
Interesting. See, I have never had the experience of playing a game on the show that was not something you could not find anywhere. You know, even these games that were pre-released, there was a quick start available in some capacity, things like that. I don't think that I would play a game on the show that couldn't be played. One, because if I have my hands on it, I will be sharing it with people, so it will cease to be unavailable because of that. But like, yeah, I've just never come across a game that was not something anyone else could play, so I don't imagine that will be something that I would do. I think it's in terms of responsibility, though. The responsibility, especially with One Shot, and the reason that I auditioned for One Shot specifically, is that the show exists to platform and showcase games that don't, by comparison, get as much love in the actual play space. And actual play is a great way to advertise and showcase your games. Whether people are even listening to the show or not, simply the act of me posting about episodes that have the show, people hearing that the game was on One Shot, in and of itself spreads word of mouth awareness about a game and things like that. The performers learn about the game if they hadn't played it already, and they walk away with some awareness of it and hopefully are excited about it and enjoy it. So like, so why, I mean, for me, it's not that I don't like bigger games. It's just sort of like, why am I gonna expend my platform power to help games that don't need it when there are all of these other amazing games that I love more that could use the help? So like, that's sort of the thing there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you gotta make sure to get all the indie heads, you know, tune into a little game called Vampire the Masquerade. I don't know.
Right. You've heard of it. I really need underground. To turn them on to that. Yeah. Yeah.
It's coming to Kickstarter sometime next year. You know, maybe you'll be able to get a copy.
Yeah. If you look hard enough.
Yeah, I think you'll. And I think that's, you know, partially the benefit of TTRPGs. In comparison to the other games, like I mentioned, where it's not necessarily that games aren't available. It's that sort of the fan culture keeps those things available. Like, could you go out to the store and buy a copy of Rifts? Like, maybe. Could you go online and find a copy of Rifts in any number of formats? Oh, yeah. Easily. Like, and very readily.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's an interesting intersection between, you know, video games and board games with TTRPGs, is these weird ways that they cross and they align and they conflict. It's cool.
Yeah.
Games are cool.
Yeah, they are.
I thought of a question and then I thought to myself, don't ask that. And then I realized it's my show. I'll ask it. It's fine.
Ask the question.
Calm down. Calm down, me. Quit being weird. Have you ever had, and because this, it's an interview show, you have to ask the gossipy questions sometimes. Have you ever had an episode of One Shot where you've been in the middle of it? Because I feel like this happens for every show, everything.
Okay.
You get in the middle of it and you're like, no, the vibe, no, it's not, we're not there. We're not there. We got to stop and we got to restart. We got to do it tomorrow.
Exactly.
Have you ever?
Exactly once.
I think
once.
That's interesting. Only that it's been exactly once. That's incredible.
Exactly once, and it was entirely my fault. This was a situation where I was about to say I had. It's present tense. I have a pretty bad anxiety disorder. It's very well controlled now, but I was having a time with it sometime within the first year, and there was a lot happening in my life, and I had a situation where I was butting up against the deadline for the upcoming week's episode, so I didn't have time to reschedule, and so I decided to sit down and record during an active panic attack. And it was, and I could feel how lacking I was and how much that affected everything else happening in the recording studio. So, I have since gotten much better at recording things ahead of time, ahead of schedule, so that if something like that were to happen, I have room and I have backup. But yeah, so that has happened to me once. It was no one's fault other than, mine, but yeah, that's one that haunts me a little bit. Cause I feel bad that happened.
Don't, you're wonderful. That's fine. Listen, one is fine. One is fine. Do you have a break glass in case of emergency actual play, like recorded in like on like a folder on your desktop where it's like, listen, anything bad happens, somebody can go on my computer and this is, you know, we've got this one.
You know what? I don't have anything like that recorded. We have two different things that are like in case of emergency break glass. I am more than James. I am a big solo games fan. I love solo RPGs. I'm a big fan of them. And so my, like, something that is like, okay, we have a cast member gets sick, recording gets pushed back, we're bumping up against dates and deadlines, and the show needs to continue to come out, I can always bust out a solo game. And I can just do that on my own, and I will have a great time, and I will make a good show out of it. But we also have, there are shows that James and company have recorded for Patreon content, and that stuff is our, like, true in case of emergency break glass, where there are games that have been recorded. They've been available for a select viewership, but can always be, like, upgraded to the public feed if, like, truly we had a week where I got sick or a disaster happened or, like, whatever, you know. So we've got some backup.
A YouTube Let's Play channel that I watch had for a while, they had a Let's Play that they recorded that they said, anytime you see a video of this Let's Play in the feed, it's because we weren't able to do a video of whatever we were doing. So whenever this happens, we just pull that lever and another episode of that comes down on the line.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I've always been entranced with that idea of, like, okay, we're doing this and that's going to live over here. And then in case we ever need a moment, then we reheat this one. There you go.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you ever, how do I want to phrase this question? I feel bad asking this, like, right after your really heartfelt thing about your anxiety and all of this.
Oh, no, I'm very open about it.
Do you ever feel awkward in this role on One Shot as, like asking people to be on the show or asking people to feature your game, where you feel like the, I mean, this might be a weird way to describe it, like the size of who you are, that you're like, I'm asking you to be on the show. And like, do you ever feel like you over pressure people, or am I giving you a new anxiety vector?
Oh, so wait, I'm just to make sure, are you asking if I get anxious when people ask me to be on the show, or when I am reaching out and inviting people?
When you're reaching out to people.
I do get some nerves about it. Especially when I'm asking someone for the first time. You know, I have some people who I've worked with before. I don't feel anxious with them. I know, you know, I can be pretty confident about that. But then when I reach out to new people, there's always a little bit of a nerve. I will say I've been making actual play for a lot longer than I've been making One Shot. And One Shot is the first real opportunity where I have the availability to pay people to be on the show, which does make it less uncomfortable to ask people, because I did a lot of years where you're inviting people onto things and you have nothing to offer them except the hope that they will have a good time. And that's tougher. That's tougher. That's definitely tougher to reach out to people with. It's a little more nerve wracking. But there's definitely like a a slightly less nerves involved when you know that you can at least be offering this person something for their time. That is definitely a huge boon, a huge privilege for me to be able to do that. And then even still, I do still get nervous when I'm asking somebody that I've never worked with before or who I've only really sort of met in passing or things like that. And you know, some people do turn you down always very politely, and very kindly. I've never had anything, you know, rude happen, but you know, when that, you know, that's the risk. The risk is that you reach out and then the worst thing is they say no, and that's all it is. It doesn't make it any less nerve-wracking, but it is just something you gotta get comfortable with.
You just get an email back. It's just like, I like James better. And just like,
I have not, thank God.
Write that down.
No, no, no.
Put, no, 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 note no, that no, person.
Not.
Just
not ever from a performer, but no.
That would be wild for so many reasons.
It'd be pretty bonkers to say the least. It would be pretty bonkers, but no, thankfully.
You kind of always hope for if they're going to be mean, you hope they're comically mean for the story.
Oh, yeah. You know? Which, I mean, honestly, anytime that someone's mean to a stranger, like, over, especially over something like podcasting, it's like, come on, that is a little funny. Like, like somebody, you know, acting like they're too good for you is in an industry where none of us have anything is pretty funny in and of itself. Yeah, that's always funny to me.
Who? This is a fun question that I just thought of. Who is the person that you could be turned down by? Like, what is the least famous person that you that could say no to being on the show to where it would still be a little painful?
Oh.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Where it would still be painful?
Yeah. Who is the least famous person that if they said no, you would be like, oh, man.
I don't know. You know, because I had some scheduling issues with Brennan, and it was purely just like, gosh, you know, his time is just so overwhelmed, and so that wound up not working out. But that was not painful, I would say. It was just very. I've never had a situation happen where I feel like getting the no is anything other than just sort of like it is what it is. I don't feel like because truly no one has ever said no in a way that would hurt my feelings. You know, no one has ever said no because we hate you. It's, you know, we get just things just don't work out, and that's so fine.
I Googled voice of Sonic and it gave me the guy who's the voice of Sonic. Ben Schwartz. What if Ben Schwartz said no?
The thing is, now here's the thing. I am not starstruck by many people.
Well, of course not. You're Dylan Appelian.
I love him.
he's great.
I love him. He is one person that I think I would be starstruck by. I think there is a chance that one day I will reach out to him and I will hear a no from him and I will be fine about it. But I have to get to the point where I am bold enough to send that message, because I think that I just got to be bolder about that.
Dylan, let me tell you something about being bold and sending messages. Maybe you just got to do it.
Maybe I just got to do it. I got to be better about sending the emails. Because sometimes you get them back.
He was on a silly YouTube like video game thing. He's been on so many silly things. He'll be on the show. I believe it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'll make it happen.
Wait, that sounds like I'm talking it down. Hang on. That's not what I meant.
Like, yeah. No, I know. No, I do want to try to be a little bit bolder about who I ask, because I do have dreams. But it is scary. It's scary to send the emails out. Even though the worst thing that can happen is they say no thank you, it still is scary for some reason.
And then literally nothing has changed, but still.
And then nothing has changed. Bad. Yeah. But it's still scary. It's still scary.
No one knows that this has occurred but you, and that's enough.
And that's enough sometimes. Yeah.
Do you have, like, so we talked before, like, how you hold games and you try to put together cast lists and stuff like that. Do you have, like, combos of, like, people and games where it's like, oh, if I did email Ben Schwartz and he came on the show, this is what we would play?
Oh, totally. I have one in the chamber that I won't really describe, but if Brennan's schedule ever does open up and he can do this, I know exactly what it will be. I know what the cast, I know what the game is. I have it in the chamber. And I have a few of those floating around that if they ever come to fruition, I know what it is.
I just love this visual of you like going through social media and then just like plucking people and games into little like scrapbook things. Like, oh,
that's exactly what it is.
Yes. Brennan will go here and then this game here. And
yes. No, that's precisely what it is. Yeah.
I love the perfect. Yes, that is what it is.
Yes, that's exactly what is happening in my mind.
You've described it exactly. Yes. It's the mind palace from Sherlock where it's just plucking things from the ether. And
yep.
This is a good segue coming out. The editing. I always have to like, I'm working on giving myself space in between questions because I'm like, I'm reminding myself. Right. Because I edit the show like in the same, like you're going to edit it. It's fine. It doesn't.
That's a fun thing. You can kind of notice if you're paying attention, you can kind of start to notice when you work with a lot of performers who is used to playing on edited podcasts and who is used to playing on live streams. Because live streamers will continue to fill the gaps with sound. And the people who are more familiar with podcasting are not afraid to take a beat and give a thought to what they're about to say or pause instead of using like just kind of filler phrases and things like that. Yeah.
I've never thought about what I'm going to say. It just comes out and we all hope for the best. We just all hold hands and hope we get there together. The fun way again, just like sometimes I have things that I want to ask and then I have to remember that what I'm about to say is going to come out of my face and I have to couch that appropriately, which makes it sound like what I'm about to say is like way worse than what I'm about to say. It's not.
Uh-huh. Okay. It's all right. Not. I'm very curious
This is the really fun interaction of being a mask presenting person in queer spaces where like a large number of people will look at me and see white man. And so I'm like, I want to make sure that when I say a thing, a lot of people don't take it a weird way.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I'm and hearing so you.
And so just sometimes I have to go like, all right, hang on. Let's take a beat and not get too excited. Okay. Dylan, what can we do to make the TTRPG space queer?
Ooh. You know, wow. That's such an interesting question because I don't think it's because there aren't places within it that aren't queer enough, but I live within a very queer tabletop bubble. So I was like, it's not? Who have we let in?
Who did we call? Wait a minute.
Who's wandering around in here? I think, you know what? I think that this is all kind of interconnected to a lot of other things that we've said, because the more love and support that indie designers who are in the fringe, with the smallest, you know, kind of platform and support, the more that we spread love for them and the more that we take and redistribute attention into those pockets, that is not only going to highlight more queer designers, more designers of color, more designers from other countries outside of the West. It's gonna pull a lot of attention just naturally by doing that into a lot of other spaces and subculture and different groups. So I think that focus shift is the way that we change that tide for sure.
And following up on that, how do we make TTRPGs hornier?
Yeah, well, I'm trying. I'm working on it. I'm for sure working on it. That's another thing. There are these pockets where games, you know, erotic games are living, but they are in like the fringe corners and these nooks and crannies and things like that that you have to go seeking. And you should seek them, but also, you know, culturally as a hobby space, we can point our attention into those crevices and get them out. We also gotta just call, like, that one in particular, culturally, we do have a puritanical problem on our hands. And that seeps into everything. You know, I've played so many games where, you know, sometimes the game text itself, or if you're on an actual play, you get the safety checklist and sexual, like, talk or content is pre-blacked out, or the game text, like, preemptively tells you that, you know.
It's only on the list so that I can scratch it out.
It's on the list just to scratch it out. And it's sort of like, all right, I guess. But, you know, like, we are in an effort to be protect people. We have also kind of gotten to a place where we're not often, and I say we, I certainly am, but like a sort of greater cultural we are starting to engage with troubling and complex and real human experiences through our media. And that's not just from games, certainly not just from tabletop games, but definitely is a part of it. So I think, like, culturally letting go of Puritanism and a fear of confronting maybe tough topics, which can sometimes include sex and sexuality, and letting go of that, those biases that that engaging in sexual content is somehow different, worse, or more extreme than engaging with fantasy violence or fantasy romance or whatever, you know. I think that those things are all worth exploring in these fictional worlds and these fictional stories that we're telling. And so, yeah, I think it's a group effort, a cultural one, but you can start by peering into the dark corners where it's already being done.
And that brings us back to Dragon Age.
And that brings it. Well, I could, but I
will spare you. But that actually brings us perfectly to All's Fair, your upcoming game, which I first of all, the cover is fantastic. And then
Caro.
Second,
Caro's a genius.
I forgot. I saw the announcement of this game and I was like, didn't Dylan just write a game about people going people fucking each other like so much that it saves the world? And yes, you did.
Yes, I did. So last year when it came out in theaters, I saw Mickey 17 and then I dissociated for 2 weeks and only thought about that movie. So
as someone who has not seen it, I was a little surprised to learn that their love life is such a central part of the movie.
It is. It's very important. I'm going to talk about it a little bit, but they're the central couple in this movie, Mickey and Nasha. Very importantly also to state that Nasha is a black woman, and Mickey is a white man, because the fascist regime that appears in this movie puts restrictions on sexual activity and is obsessed with making babies. So those two things are very at odds, which is very, very familiar to our actual real culture in real life here. Make a lot of babies. Don't be sexy. Don't be sexual at all.
Mm-hmm. Related, literally just last night, I had to explain to my partner about Nick Fuentes's "it's gay to have sex with a woman" hypothesis, which
that was a fun conversation. I'm sure. Yeah. And these, you know, these fascists in the fictional world of this movie are obsessed not just with people having babies, but also having the right kind of babies, quote unquote, and things like that. And so the juxtaposition of that, the attitude from this fascist regime and the scenes we get where Nasha and Mickey are unapologetically breaking those rules just for the love of fucking each other, just for the absolute love of doing it. And that is something. I mean, I took away a great many things from this movie. I loved this movie. I think it is brilliant. It is maybe my favorite movie of all time. But that
in they should have made a trailer off of that part of it.
And they couldn't air it. And I would wish I wish they could. But that bit really stuck in my chest in a big way. Because I do, that is a big ethical point for me, is that, you know, our human connection and our sexual expression is a vital part of our humanity and a part of our power and our strength and our ability to connect with one another. And having sex not for productivity, not for procreation, not for appearances, but having it for fun, for passion, for boredom, for experimentation, for fuck it, there's nothing good on TV.
If you'll pardon the pun, the fuck of it.
The fuck of it. That is deeply important to me, and I think it's deeply important to the world. And and you know, I think there's something that you notice a decline in sex and increase in Puritanism, and it coincides with these rises in fascism, these rises in police oversight, these censorship, laws and things like that. So the things, they can't be torn apart from each other contextually. They matter together. And so instead of just, you know, passively acknowledging that, I really want people to have a game they can play where they can feel that in real time, to feel the juxtaposition, to feel how war and dictatorship and fascism takes you away from something that is such a basic human joy and can stop you from doing what you need to do, which is to fight back, to get your freedom back. So that is kind of, that's where this game lies. It is, All's Fair is a two-player game, heavily, heavily inspired. The original title of the game was Nasha Barrage Stopped a Fascist Regime by Wanting to Fuck Her Pathetic Boyfriend Crazy Style and You Can Too.
Great title. Because, great title.
Thank you. Thank
Love
you.
Love games.
I like
God,
to,
so
I
good.
Like to title games, like Chuck Tinglewood.
It's the You Can Too, I think, that really just punches it.
Yeah, the You Can Too really... And you can too. So now it is called All's Fair. And of course, when it first came out, it was one page long. It was a basic concept. It really didn't have a lot of structure to it. I had the basic mechanic of war in mind, but I hadn't really given the thorough look at those mechanics and how they would play out. A strong look. So it was sort of like just a game that I had to get out of my chest and put out into the world so that I could feel better at the time. And so now since then, I've really worked on this game. It is much more thorough, has a really, really kind of intensive system that is war, the card game war, but has a lot of twists and turns to it that is different from how you may remember it. And all of it revolves around these two phases of the game that alternate back and forth. The part where you and your partner are dueling, aka you are in bed together, you are fucking each other, you are having the best time. And war, the part where you both are called to have to participate in the horrors that persist. And as the game goes, you will go back and forth between that. The horrors will mount before you, and eventually you will have to act.
Can I tell you the thing I really appreciate about doing this show?
Oh, please.
It is every time I get a chance to talk to somebody and they're talking about the thing that they do or the thing that they made or whatever, the process they use to get there, they inevitably describe the thing as the thing they have to get out of them.
Yeah.
And it's such, it always feels so visceral and so real and so just like, mm-hmm. like, and it's so interesting and funny to me the ways that doing all of these interviews and talking to people on and off the show, how it's not the same, but it rhymes, right?
Totally.
Someone talking about writing games, the same as someone talking about music, talking about whatever. It's always described in such the same way. And it's so enjoyable to watch people be so excited about their stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just, yeah, you know,
that
just
is a beautiful thing.
Describing that creativity, just that thing that takes hold and lives in your brain, and then they have to get it out, and it has to be out, and it's great.
It is great. Yeah, that's beautiful.
And that's why I did the show, because I haven't said this on the podcast for a while. For years and years and years, I would talk to people about, you know, like, oh, you know, you did this, like, oh, what did you do, how did this work, all of that. And I said, like, I'm like, oh, I love talking to people about their stuff, like, I should do a podcast. And one day Keegan from Plus One EXP on Blue Sky was just like, well, you should do it then. And I was like, well, fine, I will. And
good guy, go. Keegan.
Nice. And I was like, there you go. And I was like, I was like, why am I making a logo? What just happened to me? Like, why?
Yeah.
How did this happen?
Yeah.
what is it about war, getting back to what we were talking about, my silly aside, what is it about war that made it the fit for this theme?
Well the idea of using war in a game has been in my head for a bit, but this in particular, the reason that war fits is because of the two distinct phases when you are playing war. You know, there's a part of the game where you're each flipping over a card and whoever has the highest takes it. And then there is that time where the cards match and you have to go to that proper war where you are flipping cards over and competing. And so that those two distinct phases of the game matching up with what I had in my head about these two phases that are opposed to each other, the sex and the war, being so it, the game already has that. It has those two modes. I just needed to play around with them a little bit to make them work the way that I wanted them to, but they're there. And so that is the importance of that. That was why this made sense.
It's been forever since I played War, but I've never considered them at that, like, that as, like, you said the two phases of war, and I was like, have I been playing war wrong? It's like, is this a regional like, I've never considered that, like, you know, when you get the match and you flip the extra cards as, like, as a separate thing, you know what I mean? Like, I haven't played war since I've been, like, game brained, and it's like, oh, like, okay, oh, you know.
Yeah, that it's also that, like, the kind of what I call the dueling part, which, you know, is where you're just sort of flipping cards and exchanging them, is passive. That's just sort of like the passive way that you're playing. You're flipping cards, you're taking them. That's something that's comfortable to do. The event, the thing that happens in the game, is when two cards match and you are and you have to war. And so it is this kind of big deal, as far as big of a deal as things are in the card game War, because as a game on its own, it's not a very good one. But see, like, when I'm trying to design a game you know, what I'm looking for is what's going to capture the feeling that I'm having when I'm thinking about the source material, when I'm thinking about the subject matter that I'm playing with. And what am I trying to make people experience? What am I trying to make people feel? And whether or not, you know, everybody thinks about these games in that way, you know, when you're sat at the table and you flip over a match and everybody has a big reaction, and then you flip over these extra cards and the loser groans, even though you haven't been having that much fun playing this game. Like, it's just sort of like, it's just that the emotions that we have when we are playing these sort of mundane games or these sort of classic games, you know, that's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm seeking. And I'm seeking to match that feeling with what I'm writing about, what the subject matter of the game is. And I'm just sort of trying to use what I can to sort of send that emotion to people when they're sat without me there playing the game.
Without me sitting there. You have to get on a video call every time you play. And it's like, okay, so here's the symbology of what's happening, right? Okay, here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so you I don't get to be there to tell you what to feel. You have to, I have to somehow send it through the cards.
is there like a dirty set of cards as a stretch goal?
There's not. We thought about having like things as a stretch goal, but I think this game, because, you know, playing cards are something that most people have in their homes, this game could be so accessible to just be played just with the PDF or the zine and a thing that you probably already own. And I kind of want to leave it at that. I think the game speaks for itself. I think it is good on its own. And as much as that might be nice, you know, the most important thing to me is that we fund it and actually get to make it. And so I don't, you know, there's no reason to add bells and whistles that might complicate that or whatever. I just want to get this game into people's hands.
The important part is the game, not the silly, goofy thing you came up with, Matt. Sheesh.
No. No, I mean, but I do. I don't get me wrong. I love a trinket, but I, you know, we talked about it, and this was something where I just wanted to focus on the game itself as much as possible.
And their mail's getting weird in 2026, so
that's,
you don't want to be
true,
getting extra stuff in there. I've heard a number of people mention they're getting real weird about media mail. They're getting real strict about, like, is that a book? Well, it's a pamphlet. Yeah. That's not a book. And it's like, it's okay. So.
Terrifying.
Yeah. America's a hellscape in 2026.
Yeah.
And I wish
we're
not.
We're doing good.
It's great. Having a segue off of that, you just can't. You just have to let it stop. And then new line. Listener, you're not privy to this because I cut it out. But in the beginning, I talk to the guests and I say, okay, so we're gonna chat for a little while, and then when we hit a lull in the conversation, we'll move to homework. We haven't had that moment. I feel like Dylan and I could talk for like 3 hours and we wouldn't find a lull in the conversation. But I want to be respectful of his time, so I want to make sure that we, you know, keep moving through the interview, and, you know, I never want to keep anybody for too long. So we're going to move to homework. So homework for people who don't know, if this is your first time listening, first of all, welcome. I'm sure you also listen to One Shot RPG. And if you're not, you should be. Homework is the part of the show where I ask. Dylan's like, yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Homework is the part of the show where I ask the guests to bring things that they're excited about to share with all of you, in the way that the podcast is ostensibly me sharing a thing that I'm excited about. So, Dylan, what did you bring?
Yeah, I deeply need people to both watch Mickey 17 and read Mickey 7, the book that the movie was based on. Some differences between them. I just started Mickey 7.
At least 10.
These So I highly recommend both. Highly recommend the movie for sure. And so far the book I would also recommend to you, if you want to, you know, see some media that I think really does depict a sci-fi fantasy story that does a good job at portraying what fascism looks like and how important it is that you stand against it and that you stand for things that are against it, like I don't even want to go too much into it because I just want people to see it and read it and be able to see that experience for your own. So that's something that I'm bringing to the table. My other thing is I think everybody needs to play Last Train to Bremen by Caro Assertion. Last Train to Bremen is a beautiful game. It plays with the game Liar's Dice. If you don't know that game, it's a classic. It's another classic, which obviously is a thing for me, like RPGs that incorporate more classic games. But Liar's Dice is what they play in Pirates of the Caribbean on Davy Jones's ship when they are gambling for years of service. So if you've seen that, now you kind of know what it is. Very simple game to learn, and it is a perfect RPG. It plays so good. The mechanics really play in with the story in a meaningful way that I don't think another mechanic could have done. And I just think it's perfect and wonderful. And then I have been rewatching Dirk Gently. And I think you should all watch that.
I haven't thought about fantastic. That show in forever. That's hilarious. Yep.
Yeah, it's the best. What a weird little show. God, I love British television and just weird shit. And then actual play wise, I think that another show that is doing just a great job at showcasing other RPGs in a fun way and in like a really great way. My First Dungeon is just starting their Perils and Princesses season. At Session Zero is the one that's out at the time that we're recording this, and I am just so jazzed for the rest of it already. Oh my gosh, anything else? I think that those were the main ones I wanted to talk about.
I'm really excited for Perils and Princesses. Big fan of Ryan's game, like, already. Just that season of My First Dungeon sounds fantastic. So
it's going to be so good. Yeah.
My homework is going to be, it's usually one thing. I'm going to have two things where I'm calling it audible. The first thing is going to be, so like Dylan mentioned so strongly, I want to point out, I watched a couple trailers for Mickey 17. I feel like they sold me a completely different movie that wasn't as interesting. It was fine, but it wasn't as interesting as the movie you're describing. And maybe they should get on that. They should have made a trailer that really got to like the heart of the movie. I'm going to recommend the video game Horses, which is also it's a very short, narratively focused video game. It's not very action heavy. It is very heavy in terms of content. It also deals very strongly with fascism and the ways that controls bodies and sex and sexual expression. Wow. I think is a really solid companion piece to what we've been talking about. My original homework, much less heavy and serious. I've been getting into the Digimon TCG over the last few months. And my homework is not the Digimon TCG.
Oh my
TCG.
God, this is all over my feed recently.
Is really?
Yes.
Is it my fault?
No, you are the third person to bring this up around me.
Let's go.
In like the last 2 weeks. Yeah.
Let's go. It's a good game. I will softly recommend people check it out. My main recommendation is getting together in being part of a community and playing games. If that means going to your local game store and going to their weekly, monthly, whatever board game day, going to some sort of board game meetup at your local library. A friend of mine has been teaching their nephew Magic the Gathering and then got the parents into Magic the Gathering, and then other family members are getting into it, and all of them are playing together and having a grand old time. Just sort of building your community around games, and the community around playing games can be really amazing. You know, back when we lived in Florida, I met almost every friend that I have through doing TTRPGs, whether that was just randomly going to Perkins and playing Monster Hearts and Fiasco, you know, or whether it was, you know, when I was going to Pathfinder Society, I met, you know, I'm friends with people there for years. Going in the way that this can also combat fascism, going and being a part of a community and growing in that community, connecting with other people, being a part of other people's lives in a closer fashion. One makes games fantastic and is a big part of the joy, but also just, you know, being part of your local community and being a member of it is something that I want to strongly recommend right now.
Hell yeah.
Which brings us to the final question. Before we get to it, Dylan, thank you so much for being on it. I really appreciate you being on the show. It's a fantastic time. It is always such a treat. It's always nice when people say yes, you know, regardless of who it is, it's always such a delight. So thank you for taking the time.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, truly.
The final question, as we're coming to the end, on my first episode, The Amazing Star, I asked her who her top three guests to have on her actual play. It's an actual play show, on her actual play podcast would be. And ever since then, I've asked someone their top three based on whatever we talk about. Just sort of a funny, silly way to end the podcast. And I think of it during the show. So it's just a nice, silly way to take us out. For the final question, Dylan, who are your top three? And I'll remind everybody, three is very loose and can be as many as you actually want it to be. Top three BioWare romances.
Oh my God. Sure. Yeah. Dorian Pavas.
Sure. Sure. That's fair.
Dorian Pavas, Zevran Aranai, and Garrus Vakarian. Yeah. That. If I could add another one, Meryl.
Yeah.
Meryl would also make the list just after that.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I had to do the internal arithmetic where I was like, did you say the same BioWare man twice? And it's like, no, you didn't, technically.
No, definitely not.
Because if you had said Garrus and Alistair, I would have been like, that's the same guy. You said the same guy. You got to pick again.
Ooh, controversial. Oh, interesting take.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting take. Yeah. That would be what I would say. I think I'm settled in that.
I think I'm okay with this. And then I'm gonna need an email in 3 days. With this. They're just like, no, actually, I was wrong.
Yeah, cut that out. We have to re-record that last bit.
I gotta do a pickup. I recorded this in my car. Just put this in. But yeah, that's in the wild, wacky, odd world of BioWare romances.
Yeah.
If you'll indulge me, an extra question, because this is who better to ask this question regarding BioWare romances? Are you more of a fan of set character sexualities or player sexual sort of narratives?
Oh, player sexual is so actually tied to everything that I hate about. It's one of the worst things. I hate it. It takes away from the opportunity to tell an intentional story about a character and to make a character that is intentionally made with a full personality in mind. And it just sort of makes sexuality an afterthought and not an inherent part of us. I dislike it deeply. I dislike it deeply. I don't want it, and I hate it as a trend and as a preference. These stories where, you know, I know people get prickly about characters in video games who, you know, encounter things like homophobia or whatever. But the thing is that these stories are supposed to be reflective of the struggles that we face and our worlds and things like that. And, you know, and it and also, oh my God, I could talk about this forever, but it's just, that doesn't need to be part of the story for the person to still have a defined sexuality, a defined part of them. And then it robs you of the ability to tell a truly queer story because that character is not really queer, not in any real meaningful way. That is it. I forgive Dragon Age 2 on a technicality.
It makes a lot of sense.
But barely.
It makes a lot of sense because I think it's a very tricky thing in the way that a lot of the games have done it, where romance is the only way you can interact with certain characters past a certain point. You know, where like, oh, if you don't romance this character, if this character is not your object of affection, they're just not going to be in the back third of the game. Probably they just don't really have anything to say. They don't, you know, you're not going to have their side quest or whatever it is. Like, they're just going to be like, all right, cool. Have a good time. I'm going to be here. It's very interesting. It's been interesting to see the last few Bioware games, but then also things like Baldur's Gate and, you know, other similar genre games find their way through this, because I agree with you that having characters have specific preferences, specific designs, specific desires is what makes them characters, is what helps flesh out that story. It's what makes them interesting characters, and that friction can also be interesting. And when you come up against the inflexible design of a video game, because they can only program so many responses and so many that, you know, they can only design for so many eventualities, it feels like the path of least resistance to say, oh well, they'll just like the player whatever, because it's easier to design.
Oh, of course, sure. Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't make it right, but I it's that thing where like I see how we get here, I see how we follow this path, and I see how this is what's everything is good, but that doesn't make it right. That doesn't mean it's the most interesting. It's, you know, it, and, yeah. And the thing I always think about, I mentioned this earlier, and it's funny, your answer to that question aligning with this question. I think if you want to romance a specific character, you can just make a character that is that thing anyway. This character only likes lady elves. Guess what? You could just make a lady elf.
You have that power. You know. You have the power to play a lady elf character. You have that ability.
Just right at the beginning, just click. But yeah, again, Dylan, thanks so much for being on the show. I greatly appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead, let everybody know where they can find you if they want to keep up with you, keep up with socials, keep up with the show, wherever. Where should they point their browsers?
Absolutely. You can find me on the Dorkspawn podcast. You could find me on the One Shot podcast. And most importantly, right now, starting February 2nd, you should be looking on BackerKit for the Rise Wizards All's Fair duo, because I am co-funding with my best friend's game, Rise Wizards. So you will see that. It's on a shared page. I will be running through the month of February. So yeah, those are the places you can find me right now.
Heck yeah. Rise Wizards sounds like it could be a horny game.
But it's deeply not. It is a dice stacking world building game about wizard hubris, and it rules.
Okay, that does. Okay, that does sound really good.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just a funny combo that it's like, that could also be horny. What's that one about?
It could. Yeah.
As always, all the links to everything we talked about will be in the show notes. So if you're listening to this, the link to that backer kit will be in there. Go down there, save it or back it, whichever is applicable when you click the link. But that's going to be it for this one. Dylan, thank you again so much. Go ahead. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
The podcast. I want to thank Dylan again so much for sitting down and chatting. Aside from being an amazing person, their body of work is incredible. Aside from the upcoming crowdfunder for All's Fair, they're also getting ready to release their 100th episode as the host of One Shot, where they're going to be playing Void 1680 AM by Ken Lowry. It's a very interesting solo game where you're the DJ of a radio station. They've enlisted all kinds of amazing guest stars from across the TTRPG space. I'll put a link to the trailer in the show notes. Please go check it out. If you're not familiar with One Shot, it is an amazing actual play podcast that has been running for years and years. So many incredible games to check out, played by so many amazing people. While you're in the show notes, make sure you check out the link to Dylan's card. Follow them wherever you want on social media. Keep up with various podcasts, channels, microblogging websites, whatever you're excited about. I hope I don't come off as too much of a fanboy when I say you literally can't go wrong with anything Dylan has done. Of course, you can follow the show, follow me, whatever. It feels silly to say it every time. I feel like you know, but also, I'll say it. We got some special episodes coming up in February. It's an interesting little format that we're trying out for this. We're going to be hearing from a lot of different creators that are crowdfunding during February, around all of the various zine initiatives. If you want to check out some cool zines, you can go to plusoneexp.com and use the code WDPODCAST for 10% off a physical or digital order, or 10% if you decide to sign up for the RPG Zine Month subscription. RPG Zine Month is an RPG subscription where hot, new, and sometimes exclusive TTRPGs are delivered straight to your mailbox or your inbox. That's not an ad read. I just like saying the same thing, and I came up with it, and it sounds good. Again, WD Podcast for 10% off your order or 10% off your first month of Zine Club. And as always, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for checking it out, following along. I hope wherever you are, you're happy, you're healthy, and you're safe. Fuck ice. I'll see you in the next one.